on this week's podcast, Nige almost joins us.
You suck!
I give Keith shit about Star Trek Discovery.
Shit.
Shit.
I see where you're going. Shit.
And I talk about a new movie called Black Panda.
This seems very childish.
Yep. Stay tuned! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gamers, geeks, and Klingons, people who have got stacks in their heads, people who think they're possessed by the dead soul of a four-year-old child, and people who dress up as animals and pretend to hunt criminals in the middle of the night. And I stumbled over my bloody words then. Hello, it's this week's Monkey Nut Bunch podcast. And as always, on these podcasting journeys, I have Nigel. Say hello, Nigel.
Hello, Nigel.
How we doing?
All right.
And for the second time this year...
No, fuck off. I've been on this...
Oh, give him a break. It's been at least three times.
Okay, all right. The fourth time this year, we'll say. Yeah.
You're a fourth. Yeah.
It's Key. Yes, the loser of the Star Trek Discovery bets. I'd just like to add...
Yeah, you're not going to get away with that. I did not appear last week because I lost a bet. I was very, very unwell. I still am not too great. I'd like to point out. Yes.
Oh, hang on.
I caught a cold in Thailand.
Keith, if you're editing this, let's put the violin music in just to cover that.
Yeah.
Okay. The sad violin music.
Yep. Yep.
Just want to keep you on your toes, mate.
Make sure it's a violin played by a cricket because they're tiny. You know, very small violin. Yeah.
Jiminy Cricket. Okay. The rundown for this week is we'll be quickly wrapping up Star Trek Discovery because Keith wasn't here for that. We'll be going over Altered Carbon because we've all seen the first episode at least. I want to talk about Requiem because Nigel told me to watch it. And I've got a problem with Nigel's description on certain things, like the main character not being a very pleasant person. And then Keith wants to talk about some film called Black Panda. We're going to watch Black Panda. Yeah. That's with Jack Black.
And Angelina Jolie.
That's going to be a fucking DreamWorks animation, isn't it? It's going to be the fourth Kung Fu Panda film, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. So let's get on with Star Trek Discovery. I was right.
Yeah, you were right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you said you had some qualms with the ending.
That the entire final episode was a bit of an anticlimax. They were building to something and it didn't really happen. I'm still bugged by the complete redesign of the Klingons, and I think in this final episode it bugged me even more. I don't know why that came back to bug me, but it'd been such a good ride this latter half of the season. I felt the final episode didn't really do that ride justice. I think it was like, you know, it built and built and built and nothing really happened. There was
I felt that they couldn't have really topped what they've done throughout the episodes, and they hadn't set anything really up for it.
No, they
hadn't. Those episodes.
And it didn't, to me, the season final really was a bit of an anticlimax. I mean, you know, people are making a hoo-ha about the Enterprise turning up at the end. That was a bit of a cheap thing. Why do we need the Enterprise? Let this show stand on its own. The Enterprise is its own entity. Do we really need it in Discovery? I mean,
yes.
It was cool to see it. They've redesigned it again, right? So it's now kind of the love child between the Abraham's movies and the original series. It looked kind of cool. I thought, yeah, but then I sort of left feeling going, no, do something different. Don't go back. We don't need the Enterprise. You know, this show has managed to stand on its own two feet this last six episodes. Do we really need to rely on franchises the franchise's greats to carry the series. That worries me slightly.
Okay. It depends what they're going to do with it. Yeah, because I'll be honest with you. Got to the end of Star Trek Discovery, and I had this grand revelation. Yeah. But no men are in charge of Starfleet, and no men are in charge of the Klingon Empire either. That was like,
what do you expect when it's written by gay men and it's championing everything but the white man?
Yeah, I know. I watched it. The annoying thing is, it did that. I actually liked it still. That's the thing I think that bothered me the most. It's the fact that happened and it did it. And I still liked it. But on the bright side, you should have a strong male character in the form of Captain Pike for the Enterprise. And you're going to have Spock. Now, the question is, are they going to get Zachary Quinto to play Spock?
I hope they do.
Because he's not doing anything at the moment. What have you seen him in?
No, he's not. But he has said he would be interested in doing it. I mean, yeah, the fans are crying out. If they're going to do some fan service, you've got to cast him. He is the actor that you know, Nimoy kind of officially passed the baton to. If you're going to bring any of those characters back, you've got to bring Zachary Quinto back as Spock. If you're going to put Spock in it, that to me is the most important thing you can do. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are elements I liked about. I mean, come on, the Orion slave girls. I mean, you know, if we're not going to say, oh, we're now an R-rated show, let's put her in a thong so fucking thin. I mean, you know, they've always sort of played it a bit risky in the 60s, but they went full on here, didn't they? They just went, yep, they're Orion sex slaves, and we're not gonna lie about it. We're just going to go full on, fucking butt cheeks, thonged a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a bit kind of like...
I kind of glossed over that. I must be...
Well, to me, I thought it was needless. I thought, again, it was trying to go, look, we're a bit edgy now. You know, we're going to do something here and be a bit edgy. And it just didn't work for me.
Yeah. Just a quick note. We lost Nigel. He fell down the back of his chair. It's just going to take him about a week to climb back up. His computer's died, apparently. So that's all right, because he needs to come back in for Requiem. So he can... Because we want to talk about the whole of Water Carbon, not the first episode. But going back to Star Trek, yeah, I the whole thing with the Orion slave girls and everything, I'll be honest, I glossed over that, and all I noticed was... is it Rance Howard? Rance Howard, the little fella who tried to cut silly stuff.
Yes, he's been in it before. He's been in it quite a bit. He's played quite a few different characters.
He's Ron Howard's brother, isn't he?
He's played Ferengi. He's played other parts.
He's Ron Howard's brother who directed Star Wars, which would have been a good link.
Okay, sorry. Link to what?
Nothing. I just wanted to say he was Ron Howard's brother. His dad was in B5 too, so he played Sheridan's dad.
Yes.
So, yes. Was he Rance Howard? And Clint Howard. His name was Clint Howard, not Rance. Rance was the dad. Clint is the son, and so is
but he's, the one that directed. He's been in Trek quite a few times. He's played different roles in Trek,
yeah.
He's been one of these character actors that's turned up in Trek a fair few times, a bit like Jeffrey Coombs, who played Vorta, played Quark's arch nemesis, and all sorts of
things. Hang on. Hi, Nige.
You're live on the podcast.
You're on our podcast, mate.
Sorry?
You're live on the podcast, mate.
Yeah, my computer just completely died. I thought,
don't say shit, fuck or bugger.
Computer won't turn it on.
Oh.
It's completely kaput.
Okay, so...
I need a new computer.
I was thinking about building a new computer. Maybe we could collaborate and do some kind of build a computer video.
That could be a thing.
Ryzen 7 chip's quite nice.
Yeah, and expensive.
Oh, it depends which one you get. You can get a 5 rather than 7. Anyway, so I'm assuming you're not coming back.
There's literally no way I can. I thought we had a power cut. So initially I went and checked some plugs and stuff like that, and there is power, and my monitor still had power, but my monitor keeps it retains power for a good 30 seconds after power turned off. So I turned everything off and then back on, had a little look around, and it's not responding to any sort of power. So, computer died.
Fuse?
Oh dear.
It will not turn back on.
Fuse?
Okay.
I do not know what's wrong with it.
Let him examine it. Right,
you can't hear.
Check the fuse, the power cable, the power supply, etc., etc. You know what to do. So, okay, well, we'll catch you later. So we'll carry on where we were talking because it's kind of thrown us completely.
Yes, sorry about that. All I was doing was looking at Requiem. just to get you updated to where, and just for a record, with Requiem, I agree with you. He is not a nice person.
No, Matilda's terrible.
She is not a nice person at all. She's a terrible human being, and she treats her friend Hal like utter dog shite.
Yes.
And that is my opinion of Matilda, and so I'm not rooting for her in any way, shape, or form.
I'm hoping she sounds awful. I'm hoping she gets dragged to hell. End episode.
End episode. She's dead, everyone's dancing, nobody cares, Hal's happy again.
Okay, all right. Well, me and Keith will carry on without you in true Top Gear fashion.
Yes.
So, yeah.
True Top Gear fashions, we always leave our man behind. Unfortunately, this is an expensive problem to fix.
Well, have a check and then I'll catch you later. So, I'll talk to you after we finish the podcast, man. All right then.
Still being recorded, then thanks a lot, everyone, and I'll see you next week. Or maybe not. It's my computer fixed.
Okay.
See you later.
See you later. Bye bye.
Bye.
That would explain the problems we might have been having with sound. It may have been computer bleed over. Okay. So,
We're talking about Discovery.
We're talking about Discovery. There was Ryan Slade Girls and Clint Howard. He came across a bit dodgy. Tilly was the one who spotted it. I kind of predicted Tilly would have had some kind of hand in the, we're going to stop it aspect of it. And Saru would have supported and made things happen, which I was right on.
Well, it kind of redeemed Burnham in the end, didn't it?
And then she got a rank back.
She basically got her sentence quashed, didn't she, and everything. So, yeah, she got pardoned by the Federation.
Yes.
I may go and watch it again, and I may form a different opinion, but I felt that it was a bit of an anticlimax.
Yeah, you're right, it's an anticlimax. But as I said before, how the fuck are you going to top all the stuff that they've done?
Well, this is what my worry is. Is season two just going to be pants?
Because season two, for all intents and purposes, is going to get a soft reset. Yeah? Everything kind of goes back to normal.
Do you think the next captain's going to be a Vulcan? Because they said you need to go to Vulcan to pick up your new captain. Which I'm kind of pissed off, because I think Saru should be the captain.
Yeah. Saru deserved to be captain. He should have got fucking bump up, you know? Was he Commander Saru at the end? He's Commander Saru.
He was Commander anyway. He was First Officer, so he was Commander Saru. And he was Commander.
Oh, you don't need to be Commander to be First Officer. Just remember, best example, Sisko. He was Commander, he was in charge of a space station.
Yeah, that's true. But he, I think Saru was a Commander. But anyway, he should have been Captain. I think he should be the Captain of the ship. Because he's an interesting
I think he should be the Captain.
But we'll see what happens.
Interesting. I trust him. I would trust him with my life.
Maybe in Discovery, captains are going to be a bit like Kenny, and every other fucking week, one of them's going to get killed.
Yeah, that might be the case. The one thing that doesn't last to the end of the series, to the season, sorry. Okay. So, but I was right, and you owe me a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Which is the important thing.
Yeah, fuck.
Altered Carbon. Altered Carbon. I like it too. It's... It's hardcore science fiction.
It is.
I describe it as hardcore science fiction because you really have to fucking pay attention to what's going on, and you really have to make sure that you get some of these concepts through.
Yeah, and the concepts the concepts it deals with, it makes you think, and it leaves you thinking long after you've watched it. And you need to watch this twice to get it. But this is the least of the sci-fi complex out of the three books. Because there's three books, and the next two get way more sci-fi. I mean, they are like the expanse on speed levels.
I'm gonna get the books. I've decided now, after speaking to you, I'm gonna go try the books and see how good they are. Because I enjoyed it. I couldn't watch it when I was tired. I found it's nothing you can sit and veg watch. You have to be quite alert to watch it. Because you have to be paying attention to what the fuck's going on. His sister, as a character, was very interesting in the way she kind of dealt with things. But the whole thing where it starts off and it charades as a murder mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah? It goes, oh, you like science fiction? Oh, it's a bit too hard to understand sometimes. Well, we'll pretend to be a murder mystery. Everybody loves a murder mystery.
Well, it started off as a detection thing. It was like, you know, we are the Blade Runner on TV kind of thing. He is very Deckerish in many ways. Yes. And about four or five episodes in, you went, no, this isn't Blade Runner. This is going somewhere different. Because it's dealing with concepts, whereas... I mean, Blade Runner dealt with artificial life and very much on the AI front. And there's AI here, but this is very much more... It's a different concept, but you don't really realise that at the beginning.
It's a transhuman concept. It's having technology which will then allow us to outgrow ourselves as humans.
But when you go to the flashback episode, that was never the intention of it. I liked the fact that the intention... of this technology was to travel to different worlds, and
it wasn't to travel to different. It was
that's
in
what
part,
she says. She
said it wasn't to travel. No, she did it so she could live long enough to travel to different worlds.
Yes,
that's what she said. Yeah? The idea was the fact that if I sat in a spaceship and I went from point A to point B because of the distance, I'm not going to fucking make it. I'm going to die.
But the light, the faster the light travel that she mentions in the books, it isn't faster than light travel. They develop subspace technology. So they cast each other across the planet. So you basically wake up in a different sleeve, as they call it.
That's what you call it. That's the same thing that used in Dark Matter, because it had a concept called transfer transit. And the idea is that you'd sit in a pod and it would project your brain into a copy of yourself on the other side of the galaxy. Which is a cool idea. It's like we can't physically get the ship there in time.
But that's been a concept in sci-fi for quite a while. But the offset of that concept, which a lot of books never really explore, is eternal life.
That's
what I liked about Altered Carbon, because it's not a new concept of basically broadcasting yourself into a different body. As a way to travel at vast distances. It's been a concept. But the one thing a lot of these books never have dealt with or never really played upon is, hang on, an offset of this is internal life, that you can effectively live forever. And I liked how Altered Carbon came back to deal with that. And the twist is that actually they all went batshit crazy. I mean, the wife was a... You know, and they have that realization at the end that they've lived too long.
Come on. The wife with her see-through top, where you can always see her boobs, was clearly a distraction. Because
it distracted you because you've got a thing for boobs. I remember watching this going, I'm listening to what she's saying, but all Gas going to see in this scene is boobs.
It is
a bit distracting. I will give you that.
It's distracting. It's bloody distracting. I want to know what's going on. And she's showing off her fruity bits.
The minute Netflix sort of started bandying this series around, I just knew, there's going to be shit tons of nudity in this. And that scene, I think, is in episode 2 or 3, where they're walking, and there's been some complaints about this. The feminists are on the case on this one, which they kind of got a tiny point on this one.
Yeah. No. If you pissed them off, you're doing something right.
Gareth, they do have a very small point on this. You know the bit where he goes and visits the vault the first time round, and he's walking along the balcony, and they've got the holograms. You've got two dressed men, right?
Yes.
And then in the middle, you have got a completely full frontal naked hot lady. Bits and all. But they kind of got a point. That was a scene blatantly put together by a man. And they do have a very tinsy-winty point there.
I don't want to sound rude.
Why
wouldn't
you just display all of them naked? Why would you have one naked woman and two fully dressed men? You would have them all naked.
Because it's appealing to men, because men are more visual creatures than women. So contextually, that is correct. Yeah. We talk about having a context to be correct. We're talking about the red light fucking district.
Yeah, but that wasn't. This was the mess. Vault thing where they go, the uber rich people buy these bodies, and she was going, look at my sexy body, you can have me, kind of thing, and she was meant to be appealing to women, but by the same concept all of them would have been naked.
But it doesn't matter as much
anyway,
now.
It's something so small in what I felt was actually something quite different on TV. It was uber sci-fi, but it was really good. I like the ending. I thought the ending was good. I thought the whole thing paid off.
Killed Poe.
I don't know if they do did or
no. They killed Poe. They killed. Do you know how I know they killed Poe?
How?
Because he walked off at the end. The character, yeah, in his new sleeve, which we didn't get to see. You saw him walk out. If he was still around, he wouldn't have walked out. So Poe's dead. I like that. He was a good character. A weird AI that modelled himself after Edgar Allan Poe and named his hotel after the fucking poem about the raven knocking on the door.
I noticed that. And the raven sitting above the door. Every time he goes in, you notice that bit, the raven above the door. I thought that was pretty good. And the whole thing. I liked him. I don't know if he is dead. I'd be interested to see that.
No, he's dead. The little bastard Asian fella with the paedophile mustache and hair.
Yeah. And that fucking evil little...
I hope to God the actor modelled himself to look creepy. Because if he looks like that in real life, I feel really bad for what I just fucking
said.
He got
his ass handed to him in the end, didn't he? He satisfactorily met his comeuppance.
Yes, he did.
It's one of the most satisfying, you know... The payoff is there. He really does get it. And you really do go, go on, I'll take it, give it to him. And she fucking does. And I was like, yeah. And I liked it because there was satisfying payoffs throughout the whole series. And there's enough left open for season two. Season two is not going to go the same way as the book entirely, because they've already...
Sure.
Yes, because the girlfriend...
Sure, because... Given the way the Expanse has followed the books,
the woman worked out. The woman that teaches him how to be an envoy, doesn't turn up in the first book. She turns up in the third book, so she is an element out of the third book already.
If you're going to set something up, you've got to have some bits. If you know that she's going to appear in the third book, you might as well show her at the beginning.
She's not as important in the books as she is blatantly portrayed in the TV series. So I think the difference is she is still alive. So, and he'll find her and then something will happen. But he is a recurring character throughout, but he gets new sleeves throughout. The guy that plays him in this has already been cast in something new for Amazon. So I don't think he'll be coming back. Get the Asian actor that played him back. Get him to come back. I mean, he is an Asian character, for God's sake.
He can be whoever he wants to be. That's the beauty of it. And talk about changing things, but the whole thing with changing sex in that is that the people who do change sex is like, not quite comfortable in this kind of sleeve.
Yeah, but that worked as well. It worked in the fact that even though that guy had a beard, he played the feminine side very, very well, didn't he?
Yeah. It was good because he was like, I want to be back in my birth sleeve. I don't want to be in this thing. And you kind of understand that, which was good. His sister, when she did the sneaky thing with the girl, she annoyed me. I wanted him to blow her fucking brains out as soon as he had the opportunity.
Yeah,
he should have just turned around and goes, that's it, boom, you've lived too long. I'm your judge, and you've lived too long. Goodbye.
But he does that in the end. In a very human way. He blows a stack up. He shoots her through the stack. Because she says to him, I'm never going to stop. And then he...
No.
And as the ship is crashing, yes, he does, because you hear the gun.
No, he doesn't, because they get testimony from her at the end.
No, that's the video that he shot of her.
No. Go watch it again. Remember, they had changed the rules so they could take testimony from dead people if they could use their stacks. And they took it from her.
She got shot. Honestly, she got shot because you hear the gun.
She didn't get a stack blown out. I want you to watch it again. Because the whole it fits in with the getting testimony after the fact. Yeah? That she was dead. And she was put on ice. And they even said that she was put on ice. Yeah? So that gives her a chance to come back too.
Okay.
So they could do something with therapy. See, no, I complain about the whole Charlie Brooker thing with the personalities in Black Mirror. It works in this universe. That concept of doing what he did works in this universe better than it does in the Black Mirror universe.
Yes, it does. But then this is it's better set up for this that concept. The whole, I mean, essentially, it is the concept of the crux of the whole thing.
Fucking Nigel texting me. Sorry.
I love it. He's just bitching and moaning about his PSU. I loved some of the concepts it dealt with here. I liked the idea of really the conclusion at the end is that if you do live for as long as some of these people live, you do go a bit batshit crazy. Although the sister was batshit crazy right from the offset. But you can kind of understand that.
She had childhood trauma to deal with.
Yeah. And that's that was the
source of her craziness.
That's the source of whereas he overcame that. I loved the flashback episode.
Was the best episode
here. Another thing very different from what's its face, where we thought the flashback episode was rubbish.
What was the flashback episode?
I can't remember something we watched recently where there was a flashback episode wasn't needed, but here the flashback episode worked.
Probably The Walking Dead.
Here it worked, and it was one of the longest episodes as well. It's like nearly an hour and 20 minutes, although you don't notice it.
No, it was good. It was good, and what's it? I'm sorry, the actress who played his mate's daughter. Yeah, who got killed by
Lizzie.
Bancroft's wife.
Lizzie.
Yeah, Lizzie. Terrible fucking... Her hair. It's just like... It made her look like an alien. You looked at her. She's a bit...
She has human. Hair like... I've seen her in something else and she has... Her hair's like that as well. That is her hair. Her facial structure
just put your hair back when you get into a fight. You can have it undone, but just for practical reasons. Her face is caught in the gears of a machine.
She does have a slightly odd look. It makes her look a bit different, but yes, she's in something else and she looks exactly the same, actually.
Yeah.
So her hair is exactly the same. I think that's the actress's hair. But she kicks ass at the end and she stays in the synth. Which is something else I think is going to be interesting because she's basically a new kind of life form, effectively.
Not for them, because people can download the synth as it is.
Yeah, but she elected to stay into the synth. It makes a point of people not living in synth, and she elected to stay in the synth.
Yeah, because that way she can't get her ass kicked. I found it weird that she could shapeshift back into herself.
Synths.
I thought the synths were like... Fixed bodies.
No, because when they're in the room and she comes up to his mate, she says, "I can change into whatever you want me to change into." That was the point of it, that the synths could change.
Hang on, you're talking about the last episode?
Second to last episode, I think it's... Oh, no, it's the last episode when they actually go up there.
No, she's not. She wasn't a synth.
No. What I'm saying is that the models in there are predominantly synths, and they said they can change because that when he's walking through.
No, that I think you missed the point. They were real people, and they were really killing them. That was the whole point of it. They were killing real people. They were sitting there telling them that they'd re-sleeve them after, but they were killing them because the people who had lived for as long as they had. Yeah, killing someone inside a thingy and then getting resleeved, there's no consequence to that. Yeah, but when you kill a real person and they're dead and they're properly dead, there's a difference to it. And that's what she was selling to them as a service. That's what she got put in fucking prison for at the end. Yeah, that's the reason that Bancroft blew his brains out, because his wife had dosed him with Stallion, whatever it was called. Yeah, he killed one woman. Yeah, because he was fucked out of his face on this drug, yeah? And the other woman thought that she could escape by jumping off the side of the platform.
Oh, no, she reprogrammed She reprogrammed their stacks with the Catholic coding so that they couldn't be resurrected to testify. That's what she did. So that's how they were really... No, she says it. I learned how to reprogram their stacks. That's it, I remember it now. She said, "I learned how to reprogram their stacks." So the stacks have the same programming as the Catholics do, because the Catholics can't be resurrected. And the whole the bill that was trying to undid that. So because basically people kill Catholics because they know they can't testify, and the bill was saying, right, we'll spin these guys up after they've been killed, but you have to overrule the coding. The coding's in there to stop you doing that, and the bill was to. Because they found a way to overrule the coding, and the bill was to make that legal so that they could do it. And she found a way to rewrite, unbeknownst to all of them, when they started work, she rewrote the base code of the stacks that basically said identified them all as Catholics.
I don't want to sound rude or anything. I'm sure when I watched it, they didn't cover that. She just said that didn't do it.
She says it in the final episode. And the blonde girl that you see falling throughout the whole thing, Ortega steals her stack, but she can't get round the coding because she steals the stack. Do you remember in, I think it's the fifth or sixth episode, she steals the stack because that woman is, she says this woman's a Catholic. She's not, because the sister on me, when they come in and thing, the sister reprograms them so they can't be resurrected, so they can't testify against the meth. Because you can go to prison for, what they call sleeve death. The only terminology I didn't like it is "I real deathed you." Real deathed you. Couldn't they come up with something, you know, a bit better than real deathed? It sounds a bit childish. You know, permanent death would have been a better...
Permadeath.
Yeah. Would have been a better term than real deathed. No, that is, she reprograms their sleeves so that they identify as Catholics, and that's why. And then she, that's why she's against, that's why she forces, she basically bribes the rich dude into...
Bancroft
into sabotaging the bill going through. And that's one of the reasons he gets arrested. He gets arrested for bribery and sleeve death. Because he technically, they can't prove that he really killed someone. And they, just like they couldn't prove the wife drugged him, but they could. Lizzie could testify against the wife that she killed the unborn baby, which again was a crime. And that's when they both look at each other and go, "Oh, we've lived too long," and they've had that realization. But the sister was batshit crazy right from the offset.
Okay,
you have to watch this twice to pick up.
I will watch it twice when I get some time. Guess what I've been playing. Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered on PlayStation 4. It's lovely. I forgot how much I miss how Call of Duty games,
when they were good?
Play properly. When they were good, yeah. When they do Modern Warfare 2, because they're going to do Modern Warfare 2. They don't need to do another fucking Call of Duty game this year. They just need to re-release Modern Warfare 2 with better, you know, shiny graphics.
I'd agree with you. I'd probably buy that.
Yeah, because that I had so much fun playing that. Okay, I want to talk about Requiem. I know Nice said about it over the phone, and he's not here to talk about it, but Nice recommended me this program called Requiem. And he painted a picture. He spent a fucking long time painting that picture. I was like,
What? It's Nigel. He always spends a long time setting these things up.
Yeah. He spent a lot of time painting the picture, but I reckon I could paint the same picture in about 3 minutes.
Paint it for me.
All right, I will paint you the picture. Okay, Requiem. Okay, starts off. There's an old man, bowling around an old, dusty, empty house. Yeah, and all of a sudden, there's this weird shit happening in the mirror. Okay, so this weird shit's happening in the mirror. All of a sudden, the old guy goes crazy, starts smashing the mirrors to pieces. Yeah. Anyway, he's like help. There's like gardener or something. He's like driving down the old. Driveway, and he looks up, and he's standing on top of the roof. Now, I noticed something about the roof that he was standing on, yeah? There's no way onto that roof without a fucking ladder. And I mean, without a ladder. And there was no ladder there. So my brain's going, something suspicious going on here. So the old codger jumps, falls to his death. Jumps like he's jumping onto a bouncy castle, by the way. Bit off-putting. Anyway, cuts to the main character. Her name's Matilda, and Matilda is a very unlikable person. Matilda is a cello player who's kind of, remember like Vanessa May with the violin and stuff like that. She's supposed to be at like Vanessa May's level, and she's part of a duet with a friend called Hal. Now, Matilda starts off the first time seeing Matilda, she slept with some fucking stranger, and the stranger's decided to make her breakfast because they kind of like her, I imagine. But she doesn't like the stranger, which makes you think, what a bitch. Okay. Yeah. If you're going to slum it around with people, you know, at least tell them to fuck off after they've done the deed. Yeah. And call them a cab. Anyway, she goes off to a practice and everything like that. Cuts to her mum. And her mum's like, kind of, she's a lovely person and everything like that. Well, she comes across as lovely and everything. But there's something wrong with her. Yeah. If you watch it, there's something up with her. You can't tell what's up with her. And she's like, she's doing her hair and everything like that. And, she has the weird thing happen in the mirror too. And Matilda's then practicing. She's talking to her mate saying, look, going to move to New York next week. A whole fucking week to tell her mum, who's looked after her for her entire life, that she's fucking off to another country. Again, shows the character not very nice. Anyway, her mum shows up to the door, the stage door as she pops out for a cigarette, which she finds really odd. She's like, how did you know I was going to come out this time for a cigarette? And the long and short of it is she's just standing there for fucking ages waiting, all right? Not a big mystery. She adds her a thing of flowers. She then follows her to the car park where she pulls out a knife and she proceeds to slit her own throat. I don't sound rude or anything, yeah? If you want to kill someone, you have to saw through an arterial vein on the side of the neck. And it takes quite a bit of force. A really strong serrated bread knife could do it, but what she bought from Tesco's, I don't think could cover it. Anyway, all that shit happens. She then finds a box where it's surrounded by this mysterious girl who disappeared in 1994, which is roughly the same time that she kind of can remember back to. So she disappeared back in 1994, and her and her friend Pat Howe, who seems to have a thing for her, but doesn't have a thing for her. Like, they were in a relationship, she fucked him over, and he's only really staying there because he kind of still has feelings for her and he wants the money. And that's the kind of feeling you get from that, yeah? They fuck off up to Wales, and there's a funeral going on, and it happens to be the old guy's funeral that I explained who committed suicide in the first place. So that guy that guy left his house to an Australian who says, come live here. Anyway, turns out that she has memories of this place. And this is the bit that got me, and I told Nigel this over the phone before we started, yeah? Right? In the house, this is a big empty house, and there's some weird shit going on, and there's a door. Yeah, and the door's like rattling away, like there's something behind the door trying to get out. And on the door number is the number 9. So what's inside number 9? And I watched it, and I realised I didn't like the character, and I want to see her dragged off to hell at the end of the series because she's horrible, and Hal needs to get rid of her because she's not doing him any good. And he's
so
quite
the
a good
lead character is not very likable.
She's not very likable at all.
Right.
She really isn't very likable. I have no sympathy with her. But then again, if the idea is that you're supposed to not like her to start with and then have sympathy for her towards the end, then you start it off right. The problem is, doesn't quite work at the hook. There you go.
Okay, is it watchable? Is it worth it?
No, I would give it a 3 out of 10.
That bad?
Yeah, it's they did a similar thing a couple of years back, and it had the guy from Merlin. What was his
yes,
name?
Yes, I remember.
Where they had the ghost thing. I watched four of them. They went nowhere. They genuinely went nowhere. There were a few little bits here and there, but there wasn't enough.
Yeah, I tried to watch it, and it didn't hook me.
No, it was more about the mechanization of farming than ghosts. It was like there was more to do around with the fact that they'd bought a tractor than anything else. And that was the bit that kind of, it didn't hook me. I'm going to try and watch another episode of this Requiem. I'll do it late at night when no one's about, so it's a bit more scary, or less scary. But the Matilda character is fucking horrible. And it's nice to know that Nigel went, yeah, now I think about it, the Matilda character was fucking terrible. I should have mentioned that. But yes, I did that. That was not great. So yeah, it's a 4 out of 10. For Requiem so far, but I'll watch some more. If I can make it to episode 4 and I kind of feel there's a hook there, I'll watch the whole thing. But no, not looking that good for Requiem as a TV show. We're all carbon. I'd probably give it a 7. It gets 3 points deducted because it's quite difficult to follow. Therefore, not for everyone.
It is a very sci-fi series, but I'm hoping it does well enough on Netflix to get a second season. I hope.
Yeah,
it
I
will.
Want it to have. A second
season. I do as well. I really do.
And the great thing about it is they can recast all the actors and start all over again from fresh because of the nature of the entire program.
Except Ortega, but she won't be in the next one because it leaves her.
Oh, you don't need to Ortega.
No, her story's done with. I think.
Yeah.
So, yes, let's talk about. Black Panther, you've really got the hump over this, haven't you?
I've got the hump over this because I don't want politics in my entertainment. Yeah?
I agree with you, but there isn't in the movie itself. There's certain times
that if you do it right, you can slip politics in there under the radar and tell a story and not be obvious, and then have a point put across. And that storytelling is has to be very subtle and is quite hard to do. Yeah, there's not many people I think who can do it with any level of sophistication at the moment. I think they've all died out in the bloody 80s and that. But
the politics is there in this movie, but not that it's a black superhero movie, which is the politics that's going on in real life. In the fact that if you dare criticize this film in any way or think, you are a racist, which is essentially what. People are saying no critic has given it a bad review whatsoever. No critic has said that T'Challa is actually essentially a dull character throughout the entire film.
I thought that.
But it doesn't matter because the bad guy is probably the best bad guy in any Marvel film since Loki. Because he does what, and I'm going to mention this because a lot of people still diss this, but you know Benedict Cumberbatch's Khan, where you, at one stage through that film, you end up sympathizing with him. You end up almost championing him. Killmonger in this is exactly the same. And in fact, you end up, even at the end of the film, you don't really turn against him. You just see, okay, he's taken this too far. But really, you get exactly where he's coming from. Throughout the whole film, he is the problem with all of Marvel's films is that their bad guys are always really one dimensional or two dimensional at best. They've never really had, with the exception of Loki, and only because of the actor rather than the writing, has there ever really been a very charismatic bad guy in any of the Marvel films. In this, he is a fully fleshed out character with motivations that you can understand, and at some points you're going, yep, go for it. I kind of agree with you. And the politics here is the fact that Killmonger believes passionately that Wakanda should be doing more to help black people around the world that are being persecuted and things. And Wakanda has the technology to be this shining beacon for African people around the world. And it's true, because Wakanda has all of these spies throughout the van, but they don't do anything. They don't really do anything to help people with their technology. They're isolationists. And that is very much having a go. Unfortunately, I hate to say it is having a go at this whole America First thing. And it is, but I don't know if that's its intention. I think it's more of a...
I'm going to turn around and correct you, because... It's not about the whole America First thing. The Eric Killmonger's philosophy is actually based on the first chapter of Mein Kampf.
In the comics, maybe. In the movie, it's because his father gets killed by the king at the time. His father gets killed and he witnesses that. So he's kind of got a whole grudge going on. And he does believe that Wakanda should help more people. And yes, he does take it too far in the fact that he wants to ship weapons to all these people so they can stand up for their own rights and stop them being persecuted. That's what he says. And he starts sending these weapons out. And it is very much a having a go... a nation that's isolated itself, and whether that's its intention, but that's how a lot of people have interpreted it. I actually think that that's bollocks. That's not what the intention of the director was. Its intention is because at the end of the film, Wakanda opens its doors, which is very much leading into the next Avengers film, because basically this is where we're going to get all the technology that's going to defeat... what's his face in the end? And not even remotely.
It's not going to happen. That's why you need the Guardians of the Galaxy in Thor.
Yeah, possibly, but that's it. It certainly
Wakanda thing is you're going to have Thanos and his cronies. Yeah, are going to march into Wakanda, then they're going to tear the tree down where that fucking herb grows, and underneath it, they're going to find the Soul Gem.
Yeah, possibly. Is that what you think it is? That's what drives the plots.
Think about the trailer bits that you've seen, yeah? They're clearly attacking Wakanda and New York.
Yes.
All right? They're attacking New York. Who's in New York?
The Avengers.
Strange.
Yeah.
No, Strange, oh, Strange. Is in New York. And what's Strange got?
The time stone.
He's got the time gem. Yeah. Where's the next place you're seeing them attack? Wakanda.
Yeah.
Why would they attack Wakanda if there isn't one of those gems there?
Because it's got a stone.
There's one of the gems there. It's a soul gem, and that's the thing that allowed them to have the power and stuff.
It's a good movie. I like the look of Wakanda. You get this fly through very at the beginning, and they've somehow managed to incorporate very African architecture and a very African look to a very futuristic city. It's really kind of cool.
I've seen the shots, and it looks more like London.
No, it's not. You haven't seen the right shots.
Sharp and Swiss Re in there.
No, but then it's got... There's a bit where there's like a sharp building, but then built around it, it's kind of like an African mud hut with like a thatched roof. And then out of this thatched roof is like a sharp-style building. And when he lands on the pad, there's very African architecture all the way around. And then walking down through... When he walks through the market street, there's a very sort of African-style market going on the street level, but with these buildings. But then when you see them up close, they are they're shaped like certain things, and you have to watch the film. It's a lot better than you think it is.
Okay, I'll go and see it when I get a chance.
And it's very funny in places. I love the actress that plays his general, his chief guard. She has some brilliant comedic moments. And there's a bit where there's a car chase. I think they're driving through Korea. Because they go to this sort of, they go basically to get Unice's claw, and they're chasing Unice's core. And he fires this, he's got this weapon built into his hand. So his hand opens up and he fires this thing, and the car that the two girls are chasing him. So you've got T'Challa's love interest and the general, and they're driving this car, and she's doing, you know, the love interest is doing all this, you know, shooting back. But Unice's claw just fires this thing at the car, and this car just explodes. You think, that's it, they've got to be dead. And then it just cuts to the girl still, very much like that flash scene where he disables the car, and all this is her in this chair, not driving, and the chair moving forward, and it is really funny. I mean, the comedy where there is in this works. The thing that doesn't work is there's some really, and I mean really bad CGI in this.
Yeah, I was told that. I was told
and
that
it's apparently a problem that's becoming very a big problem in Hollywood now, because the studios are not willing to pay the FX studios the money that they should be paid to make these things. So all the FX studios are now trying to undercut each other to get the work. And as a result of that, they are submitting substandard VFX. Put it this way. The FX shots in Thor, there's quite a few problems with Thor stuff. So when you saw the cinematic version, there was a lot of problems with it. All of those were fixed after the movie was released for the DVD or the Blu-ray release. And okay, it's happening a lot, but there's some really, really bad bits where there's a bit where T'Challa is on the car and the car hits something. So the car throws him, and he kind of flies up. He gets thrown off the car and he spins, and then he lands on the car in front. But it's so bad. I mean, it's really bad. I haven't seen that much bad CGI since Harry Potter 1, and there's some fucking dodgy CGI in that.
That was like 18 years ago.
No, this is the thing. They reckon the best CGI is still bloody Gollum. And there was a company that won the best visual effects that year. They won the Oscar for Life of Pi, because the CGI in Life of Pi is fucking incredible. It's some really good special effects, and it was groundbreaking at the time. The tiger. You know, there are scenes there where you think that tiger is real, and it's not. He's fully visual effects. That company went bust 2 weeks after winning the Oscar. And it's happening a lot, apparently. There's quite a few. There's a Nerdist article, read it, about this. It's very interesting. It's quite a long article. It's more of an essay. But it's worth reading, because you don't realise it.
I heard something really funny, yeah. And it was about piracy. And it went like this. It's fine to pirate stuff. And it's like, kind of, why is it fine to pirate stuff? Well, it goes like this, yeah. Don't you see that DVD? We have every so often in the UK, we have a bit where it goes, thank you for supporting your local film industry, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it goes, helps to support the people who make it, as in the set builders and all of that. Yeah. Well, it goes like this, yeah. The set boat builders and stuff, when the film has come out, have already been paid. Haven't they?
Yep.
So have the sound designers, so the VFX people, so is everyone. Ooh, so no. The only people who are missing out on money are the execs.
Yeah.
And the shareholders. And I'm like, oh, I should pirate more stuff. That's one of the best arguments I heard for pirating something. Was that, I found it really amusing.
There's probably some truth in that.
There is some truth in that. Those people have been paid up front.
Mostly.
Haven't they?
Not always.
Oh, no.
Actors don't always get paid up front. Actors
God. Poor actors. They can only afford one jet this year.
Some actors take a cut of the
yeah,
it depends who's making the movie. Some of the lower budget movies, that they make money out of the takings, and they might sign up to a film with no pay at all and take a percentage of the cut of what the film makes. That happens quite a bit. That happens
technically, they can't do that. They get paid basic.
Read this article, you open your eyes
for the episode. Fucking hell, Keith, can I talk?
Sorry,
they get paid basic, they have to get paid basic. That's the actor's rule. Yeah, the
basic could be like $5.
No, basics, I think it's about
$32,000 for a film. Yeah? No, it's not basic as a basic wage. It's like normal people. Their basic is a lot more.
It depends on who's making the movie, because there's some people, there's some actors that we know that shot movies free. No.
Basic is an agreed standard across the thing, yeah? So the big time people, if they want big time releases, the least they can get paid is basic. I can't remember what the rate is. Don't question me. I know what the basic rate for engineers is in London, but I can't tell you what it is for actors in Hollywood. That makes you feel
in Hollywood movies potentially, but that's not always the case in movies that are not made in Hollywood. In Hollywood movies potentially, but I ask you that you should go and read this VFX thing, and it will surprise you. It's quite interesting.
So what do you give out of 10? What do you give Black Panda?
I would say I'd give it probably a 7 or 6. Probably seven. It's entertaining. Probably. It's a good popcorn movie. I think it does. It's a good one. It's nowhere near the best Marvel film, but it's nowhere. It's not by any the worst. It's not nearly the worst.
Okay.
Very interesting. Just go on.
Just a quick note. I watched Justice League. I actually watched a pirate copy of Justice League, and it's a funny kind of ironic story, because I watched the whole thing and it didn't have the ending on it. So I got close to the ending. Superman just turned up to take out Steppenwolf and his crew, and the copy ended.
Spoiler.
To which I've got...
He does.
Oh, really? Oh, I never knew that. But it's like kind of, I've got to go and buy it on Blu-ray now, because I actually liked it enough to buy it on Blu-ray.
Really? You liked Justice League?
Yeah, I liked it. It is not a great film. It's not a great film. And it's a passable good film. So
I wouldn't even say rating, it's a passable good
it's
film.
It's a 5 or a 6, depending on my mood.
Oh, it's, yeah. But Black Panther's better than Justice League. God,
I don't know. I've seen Black Panther.
No, so it is. I didn't like Justice League. I thought Justice League was terrible.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why I think it's a terrible film. Well, I don't think it was terrible.
I
just thought it wasn't great.
It didn't really have a story. I think the every time Superman's on screen, the fact that he looks like a Ken doll because the CGI for removing his moustache was so bad, it's unbelievable. The only thing I liked about it is, no, that's a lie. I loved the Flash in it. I liked the Flash in it, really. But I don't know what else.
I was going to say, the fact that I had a pirate copy and the quality was lower might have been the reason I probably liked it a bit more, because that didn't show up as much, but at a lower res, I imagine it wouldn't show up as much. Might be a benefit of watching it. But I still have to go and buy it now, because I do want to see what happened at the end. Dexter liked it too, because he liked the Flash, because the Flash was interesting. The problem is that Ezra Miller isn't Barry Allen.
No.
If you compare him to the comic book characters, he's not Barry Allen, he's not Wally West. He's not a Jay Garrick character.
He's playing a different...
Yeah, but the Flash isn't like that. The Flash is... Speedster... This is what my brother says. He goes, when it comes to superhero characters, the Speedster superhero characters should be the cockiest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have a right to be the cockiest, because they can outmatch anyone, and you can't get anything off before they've done X, Y, and Z. So they can be super fucking cocky.
They're the Spider-Man of DC.
Ezra Miller is now being typecasted as just playing a character who's Aspergus.
Yes.
Because he's fucking Aspergus. That's it. So he can only really play one type of character.
Yeah.
So he's Aspergus, mate.
His Fantastic Beasts character is slightly different, but...
No, he was just, came across as having a form of autism in that.
Yeah. No, I see your point.
He's still a fantastic actor. He's an autistic actor. I genuinely think he is, which there's nothing wrong with that. It's just he seems to be.
Oh, he's definitely portrayed that way in the film. He's definitely portrayed as having a form of autism in the film. The film heavily hints at that without actually outrightly saying it. You'll need to watch the
I understand deleted... why. Because I would understand if you had the Flash had a concentration issue and had ADHD. That would make perfect sense.
Yes.
Yeah? That would make perfect sense. Because, as I said, if I were to draw these characters up and try and make them a bit more modern, it would be the Flash has ADHD. That would be the thing. It would be the Flash has ADHD. Batman is nihilistic. Nothing talking about blah, blah, blah. Everything needs to be black.
I only ever work Lego. In black. And sometimes very, very, very dark grey. I love that line, Lego movie.
But yes. Oh, did you see the Doctor Who logo?
Yes. Yes, I know like what it's hiding at the end.
Yeah, I know it's hiding at the end. It's hiding the fucking Venus symbol at the end.
Yes, fucking blatantly.
Female or feminism or whatever. Great, you tell us the Doctor Who being a woman doesn't make any fucking difference and you start doing shit like that.
I don't like the logo. I liked the poster they released of her standing on the hill. The poster's fucking cool.
But the thing with the poster is, it's not very Doctor Who-ish. More Lord of the Rings.
Right, hang on. I understand that a show like Doctor Who, to stay relevant, sometimes has to reinvent itself. And every showrunner likes to stamp his personality on it. Moffat did it with changing everything. And I can see Cinnamon doing exactly the same thing. I thought the poster looked cool. I liked the poster. I thought, that looks quite cool. And the good thing, the thing the poster had in it, had the TARDIS in it, which lends me hope that she will find the TARDIS pretty quickly. It's not going to be 10 episodes of trying to find the fucking TARDIS.
Or just 10 episodes of stuff like that. Yeah.
That gave me a little bit of hope.
Just the end of the episode when it spat her out. Just went, I'm fucking off. I don't want to be part of this shit. I'm going to go back. I've been around longer than you have, love. That's true. Totally, that's been around longer.
I don't like the logo, but I do like the poster. I thought the poster looked cool. I thought the logo was a bit simplistic.
Did you catch the fact that the TARDIS was in pink?
It was not in pink. it was not in fucking pink. Don't play.
If he comes back and it's in fucking pink,
walk into the new TARDIS, it's going to have little tea coated everywhere.
Fucking doilies.
It's not. It's not. You know it's not going to. They're not there. Although the logo having the fucking Venus symbol in it, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like,
the other thing, too, is does it give you the impression like someone has drawn a line through Doctor Who, like they've tried to cross it out?
Yes.
It's kind of symbolic, that, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, we're trying to cross out Doctor Who. That's what I say. That's not a good thing to put across.
I don't like
that. Anyway.
As I said, check out the poster. The poster's awesome.
Anything else to talk about?
Not this week.
Okay.
Because I'm nearly dead now.
Yes, nearly dead, Keith.
And Nigel, by Nigel's computer blowing up, he's given me a truly hellish editing job because I now have to edit his fucking audio out of the backup recording. Nigel.
See, what I would have done is just keep the track mixed in until it disappears and then separate the tracks out.
There's only a tiny bit of his audio in it. So hopefully you will see my editing wizardry and this podcast will still sound well produced. I hope. Anyway,
yeah, well, I couldn't use Knight's original recorded audio last week because issues, which we're trying to fix this week, and that's what might have blown his computer up. Different headphones. Use different headphones, Knight, so don't get a blade bleed over.
I think we should end it. Technically, right? He's got a blade. Can you get Skype on the PlayStation 4? You can't now, can you? You used to be able to get it on an Xbox.
Yes, you can get it on the Xbox still.
Because you can plug the fucking Yeti into an Xbox and you can do the podcast. Technically, he could plug it into his phone and do the fucking podcast.
We've actually done that from Florida.
Yes, so, yeah. We have.
It came across all right, actually.
It did. It was quite good. It worked really well. You two gatecrashed the fucking podcast from Florida. You bastards. Although I record it from Thailand every week. So. Anyway. Yes. Right, we should end it there because we've been rabbiting on for a while. Thank you for joining us this week. I've been Keith.
No, it doesn't work like that. I'm the one who closes it down.
Yeah, I know. I was just
Thank you to... for listening. Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Keith, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll see. Well, you'll hear us in the next podcast. This is where Keith goes, bye.
Bye. I was going to just insert a random... Thanks for downloading the Monkey Nut Punch podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Monkey Nut Punch. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Monkey Nut Punch.